Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Tolkien Road, episode 200.
200.
You heard it right.
That's amazing.
I said 200.
That's two with two zeros after it.
That is correct.
Mm-hmm.
Greg, let me adjust my microphone here so I can lean back and enjoy myself a little more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Too bad it's the morning because I feel like we should be like doing a toast or something.
Well, we both have coffee.
Well, we both have coffee.
Yeah.
But, you know, it'd be nice to have something a little more celebratory.
Episode 200. To 200 episodes.
To 200 episodes.
Yeah, wow. So, I've been thinking a lot about what we were going to do on episode 200. And, you know, I'll admit, I'm not super into the idea of... I'm not the person who, like, gets all excited about being my birthday or, you know... really anybody else's birthday.
It's true, people. It's true.
Sorry, it's a character flaw. I get it, and like, you know, it can be fun. But I didn't want to be all like kind of self-congratulatory and, you know, making too big a deal about it being episode 200. So there you go. That's just more of my personality coming through. But at the same time, I realize like it is a milestone. And
absolutely.
And I do realize that those are actually important things to you know, spend some time reflecting on. And so maybe episode 200 is a good time, like we did on 100 to some extent, to pause and reflect on where we've been, what we've learned after 200 episodes, and where we're going from here.
Yep.
So that's really the plan.
I think that's really good.
I haven't settled on my title for this episode as we record, but I'm kind of thinking of like life lessons from Tolkien or what we've learned from Tolkien or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So
those be kind of off the cuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, this reminds me of just thinking about anniversaries and kind of, you know, milestones and celebrating them. I was reminded of the Counting Crows concerts that we went to a couple of years ago when they were doing their, I think it was 25th anniversary tour.
That's right. Yeah.
And I know Adam Duritz, you know, was kind of reflecting on that throughout the concert, and he was saying how what they wanted to do with, you know, as a way to celebrate this milestone was to kind of reflect on again where they've been, what they've learned, and then he kind of did some storytelling about like what inspired the songs and different things that happened through their 25 years as a band. And I thought that was really cool. Like it gives you some really little known insight into their music and into the band and all that. So I think you have a good idea here for episode 200.
Yeah, you know, because it's never really been about us, right? Like it's about Tolkien, and you know, we're just two people trying to recognizing the amazing mind and work that this man had and saying how can we internalize more of this? How can we join with others who are interested in exploring more of this? And so, although we do the podcast and it is our podcast, like it's hard for me to not feel like it's more about Tolkien and even to a certain extent that it's not as much about you guys, the listeners.
Yeah, the listeners.
Because,
absolutely.
You know, I think it takes all three of those groups of people to make something like this, to truly allow it to happen for 200 episodes.
Yeah, right? I totally agree.
So I'll edit. Anyway, that's the preface. So let's just hit a couple of quick things, as we always do before we dive into the main topic. Please support the Tolkien Road. Here we are at 200 episodes, and you know, I just want to take a moment to say thank you so much to everyone who has listened and supported us, and we'll do a longer list of thank yous towards the end of this episode, but you know, I especially want to thank our patrons, both past and present, and especially those who have been with us like from the beginning. Since we started the Patreon thing a few years ago. Shout out to our newest patron, who is Mike M. You should be like Mike M. Support us
be
on
like
Patreon.
Mike. Yeah.
Yeah. Support us on Patreon. Head on over to patreon.com/Tolkien Road to find out the details. I'm trying to do a little bit of a revamp to our Patreon here. So there's going to be some new perks and that kind of thing coming along. So you'll definitely want to go over and check that out and become, you know, really a member of that community, and someone who, you know, really wants to support what we're doing here on an ongoing basis. I wanted to tell you also about a new thing that I've just launched, which is TipJar. So TipJar is a feature that allows you to leave a tip for a specific episode or just a one-off, like saying, thank you, I just finished binge listening, you know, for the last 2 weeks. Thank you so much for this. And here's a token of my appreciation, because I recognize that not everyone wants to become a regular patron, but I've had people reach out to me in the past and say, how can I, you know, just, I can't become a patron, but I want to support you financially. So how can I do that? And I've never really had an easy thing to tell people before. So I went and I kind of worked on, creating this method to do it, right? TipJar. So you can find a link to TipJar on TolkienRoad.com, and it's super easy to use. And in fact, from here on out, and probably for past episodes as well, I'm going to add a link to each episode for this TipJar that you can actually be like, hey, this is a great episode, thanks. Like, mm-hmm. here's a $5 tip to say thank you for this episode, or whatever it may be. You can go beyond $5. So,
there's no limit to the tip jar.
Amen, sister. All right, so super easy to use. It's easy to find. Please do be generous, as your generosity directly contributes to our ability to be generous and continuing this journey.
Word.
So it's all that big system of generosity, which mm-hmm. is the way it's supposed to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
So wonderful ecosystem of generosity. Rate and review us on iTunes. I want to emphasize that review, because we don't often do that, but my understanding is that reviews are actually... The ratings are important, like the 5 stars, right? But the reviews are actually even more important than just a rating, because iTunes recognizes and says, oh, there's a lot of people contributing to giving feedback on this show, right? So so please do, please do rate and review us on iTunes. And hey, if you're, I found out recently that Spotify doesn't allow for rating and reviewing podcasts yet, but if you're a Spotify listener, we would hugely appreciate it if you, because I know there's a lot of people who listen on Spotify, we would hugely appreciate it if you take a minute to go over to iTunes and leave us a rating over there for the podcast, right? I know it's maybe a little bit more work than you might do, and we do want you, when Spotify eventually gets their act together, we do want you to do it over there too, but it would mean a lot to us if you did it on iTunes. And then please subscribe to our feed as well, right? So don't just listen to episodes, but subscribe to the feed. Finally, we'd love to hear from you, TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com. You can go through the website, TolkienRoad.com, Facebook, Twitter, etc. So any of those ways is fine, and we always strive to get back to people, if not in a timely manner, at some point. So,
And that's the royal we.
Exactly.
Meaning John.
I always do. I do share, especially when it's a particularly longer note. I generally share the correspondence with Greta, right? So,
yes.
But you guys know, after 200 episodes, this is kind of my baby, and Greta, mm-hmm. I'm Greta's baby. So she's, she enjoys it, but it's, we did the last two episodes. We have a funny note about the last couple of episodes without you to share towards the end. So, I got a chuckle out of it, and it'll make you feel good. So,
okay.
All right. Well, anyway, all of that, you know what to do. Please support us in any way you can. Any of those above ways is greatly appreciated.
And thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
Yes.
Yes. SpeakPipe. So we actually have 2 SpeakPipes this week.
Whoa.
Yeah. So,
that's
sometimes
like a new record.
We've been in kind of a SpeakPipe drought for a little while, so it's awesome to have two to respond to and listen to.
Yeah, totally.
So we are going to do that next. So our first SpeakPipe is from Paul C. I've actually got to rewind it. All right, here we go. Paul C's SpeakPipe.
Hi, John and Greta. I'm Paul from North Carolina. I discovered your podcast a couple weeks ago, and I'm really enjoying it. I love how honest and genuine you two are. Right now, I'm listening to your Second Age deep dive, and I have some thoughts on the Old Testament parallels with Numenor. I don't know if you've already commented on this, but to me, the Numenoreans are strongly analogous to the Israelites. They were brought out of the ancient tyranny of Morgoth through divine power in the midst of a cataclysmic flood, just like the Israelites were delivered by God from the bondage of Egypt in the midst of the Red Sea. They're then given Numenor, the land of the gift, which is like their promised land. As long as they stuck to the true religion, they were wildly prosperous, just like the Israelites were unmatched in battle while they served God. And then especially the decline of the kings of Numenor reads just like the decline of the kings of Israel and Judah into evil. And Tar Palantir is like Josiah, who discovers the Book of the Law and towards the end briefly turns the people back to the true religion. The destruction of Numenor and the flight of Elendil is then like the Babylonian conquest and exile, where God simply has enough, his patience is spent, and he takes away the promised land, the land of the gift that his children have kept so long in spite of their sin. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on any of that.
Awesome. Well, Paul, those are, first of all, thank you for your words of appreciation. And, you know, it's always, as we say, we always appreciate being appreciated.
Mm-hmm. We do, indeed.
Especially with such glowing words. Those are some really fascinating thoughts.
I don't think we talked about this at all on the podcast, did we?
I feel like it's been brought up from time to time. I don't know that it's something that we've dove into, but you know, those are some really interesting points.
I definitely
see the parallels there. Certainly, there's every reason to believe that Tolkien would have been very well versed in, you know, the story of the Old Testament, as a Catholic and a Christian from a young age. You know, whose guardian was a priest.
Yeah,
it seems logical. I mean, he was an altar boy, right? So you know, he would have been at Mass frequently and heard readings from the Old Testament. So it just seems logical that he would have been well steeped in those things as well, and perhaps the trajectory of that story, you know, would have been something at least in the back of his mind as he composed the mythology of Numenor.
Yeah.
Right.
I completely agree. Yeah.
So, it is interesting to think about. I certainly remember when the film Return of the King came out, before I really knew, you know, a lot about Tolkien's stories and background. You know, just that very name has a resonance of like, a very strong Christian resonance, right? Because in the sense of like the Christ being the King, right?
Oh, yeah,
right? That,
yeah.
That comes
Who
along,
will come
which,
again?
Which is the which is the Christian story, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the New Testament following on the Old Testament. So, I definitely see those parallels strongly there, and I'm sure there's more. You know, if we were to spend some time.
Yeah.
You know, reflecting on it more deeply. So, you know, Paul, you know, I don't know if you have your own blog or, you know, podcast or something like that. But, you know, if you were ever to, you know, put your thoughts down in that regard, I'd love that to be an article to share or, you know, possibly to have you on the podcast at some point to talk more in depth about that, about those parallels.
I agree. Yeah, that would be great.
It's a very, very fascinating topic.
It is. And I, you know, just listening to all the parallels he pulled out, I was like, oh my goodness, how did I not see this? You know, I mean, I don't want to say it. I mean, it clearly took some good thinking on Paul's part, but he just explained it so clearly. And I mean, it's like even the detail of the floods, you know, the parallel of the Red Sea and then the flood. It's like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Absolutely. Very good stuff. So thank you, Paul.
And thank you.
We appreciate hearing from you. And we continue to, you know, we'd love to hear more insights from you on this note in the future or on obviously a very deep thinker. So we'd love to hear more from you. Any other thoughts, you know, going forward? And once again, thanks for listening.
Yes. Thank you very much.
All right. Our next speak pipe is from Joey.
Joey.
All right. Here's Joey.
Hey, guys. Joey here. Huge Tolkien fan, of course. Love the podcast. You guys have been very humorous how you've been going about it. Keeps things interesting. Actually read through the Silmarillion years ago and thought, what the heck did I get myself into? I don't understand this gibberish, but I got through it, made sense of it enough, and loved it. Second favorite book compared to the Bible. But it really helps with your podcast, just giving insight on things that I may have read or went through fast. But anyways, wanted to reach out and ask if you guys knew about the Lord of the Rings prequel television series that Amazon bought the rights to. Supposed to be coming out sometime next year. I'm super excited. I think any Tolkien fan is. It's supposed to span anything in the Second Age. That's the only thing they could get the rights to. So I was wondering, you know, it would be cool if you guys came up with a podcast and just discussed what major things throughout the Second Age that they could carry over to the television series. That'd be pretty awesome. But big fan here. Party on.
Party on, indeed.
Party on.
Yeah, you know, the whole... the Wayne's World of Tolkien podcasting.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of wish we'd never let, forgotten about that.
But. I know, right? I was like, man, that's a throwback, but I wish it wasn't.
Yeah, I know. It's interesting how much things can evolve and just change and, over 200 episodes. But, I hope we still have that feel to some extent of the Wayne's World of Tolkien podcasting.
I like
podcasting.
To think we do.
But party
especially
on
with me on here.
Thanks, Joey. Thanks for your, again, for your kind words.
Yes, and, absolutely.
Thanks for listening. As far as the Lord of the Rings show, I'm guessing you must not quite be all the way caught up with where we are
right.
currently.
It sounds like if he just got through the Silmarillion, probably not.
Yeah.
But
yeah, so
you have lots to look forward to, Joey.
Yeah, definitely, Joey. We've definitely talked a good bit about the news of the Lord of the Rings prequel on Amazon, the Second Age Middle Earth show that's going to be on Amazon. We are very excited about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're first of, you know, not only are we Tolkien fans, but we also really love, I mean, one of our,
we like TV,
we like high quality TV shows, mm-hmm. right? This kind of prestige television that has become a thing over the last decade or decade and a half or mm-hmm. whatever, but so we're huge watchers and rewatchers of our favorite shows.
Yep.
So this is like a dream come true in
absolutely.
A lot of ways, right?
Absolutely.
I would not have honestly wanted any more Tolkien movies anytime soon. I would want something like this.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
And just the idea that they were able to coordinate with the Tolkien estate to create a show that is centered in an age where there really aren't a lot of stories, a lot of detailed stories, right? There are stories, but not on the level of Lord of the Rings, where you basically have a manuscript to adapt to a screenplay, right? This is something where they're going to actually have to flesh out a lot of what we don't know already, which is extremely exciting. It's exciting on the level of like, we'll just have something to talk about, but it's also exciting on the level of like the dialogue it's going to create and around how well did they do this? Do we agree with kind of the things, the way they flesh this out? But also on the level of, just drawing so much attention again to Tolkien and his works.
Right.
So, I mean, all that is to say, like, we are beyond excited about this. And we're just like, would you all hurry up and, like, drop some, like, news on
maybe a trailer or something?
Seriously, just
awesome.
Give us something, to talk about. We are waiting with bated breath. In fact, Joey, you might not realize this, but we actually have a special name for the show.
Yep.
A kind of a friendly name for the show, and that is Latron Prime.
Latron Prime.
So,
which John came up with. I can't take any credit for that, but pretty clever. And Joey, I think, too, you'll discover as you move through the episodes that we actually did several podcasts on that we referred to as Second Age Deep Dive.
Yes.
Where we read a couple of stories from... was it Unfinished Tales?
Definitely from Unfinished Tales. We also re-looked at Akalabeth.
Akalabeth, that's right, because that's the Second Age. So we've spent a good amount of time talking about some of the things that could be
mm-hmm.
subjects of episodes for the Latron Prime series.
Yeah.
So I hope you give those a listen.
Absolutely, yeah. That would be my recommendation, in fact, is to is to go back and listen to those episodes, which are all pretty recent. But there's definitely those, there's our Second Age Deep Dive episodes, And there there are a few episodes where we just react to news, especially the initial news of what's coming. And then we've also recently did the Future of Middle Earth 2020 edition, which I suppose maybe we'll be doing one of those every year at some point. But, you know, all of those are where we're kind of dealing with this. So, you know, we're doing a lot of talking about not a lot of news so far.
It's amazing what we can come up with.
I'm waiting for the floodgates to open. And, you know, I anticipate a time where this show is going to be very focused on that show, right? Like,
and we may even be recording more often than once a week just to keep
maybe
up.
Maybe, yeah, because yeah. I don't know about you, Greta, but I kind of hope that, I don't think we've talked about this before, but I kind of hope that we actually get this show in like weekly installments.
Yeah, as opposed to all at once.
To all at once, because I feel like it's going to be hard to, like, I feel like it's more fun to react as fans when you get it in weekly installments. Mm-hmm. Like, what does it hold
next?
Not
knowing what's coming, yeah.
Right.
I agree. We have talked about this.
And instead of like artificially having to impose on yourself, okay, we're only going to watch one episode.
Right.
Right. And we're going to talk about that because we know none of you are going to do that, right?
Right.
Like, we're going to binge whatever's given to us.
Right.
As super fans of Tolkien, so.
Right. Yeah. But we were talking about Lost and mm-hmm. how fun it was to, like, I mean, stressful. And, you know, as much as we wanted to know what was going to happen, because those episodes always ended on a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
But there was something really fun about, you know, kind of brainstorming and discussing, oh, what do you think is going to happen to this person, or
right.
what's going to happen with this plot twist, and not knowing for a week. It gives you time to kind of, and it gives you time to kind of digest what you've already seen.
Yes.
You know, and appreciate it for what it is before moving on. So, but I don't know. I feel like they're probably going to release it all at once. Don't you think?
That seems Amazon to be the seems trend. To do that.
Yeah.
That seems to be Amazon's modus operandi, but maybe, I don't know, maybe, you know, I feel like there was a wave where that became the thing. Like, when Netflix especially got into the streaming game, they started, you know, they kind of pioneered doing that. And everybody's like, oh, that's weird. Doesn't it rob you of this? And so I feel like there's still people who think that the other, I think as a marketing team and as the production team and whatever that holds the reins for these kind of things, you got to honestly ask yourself, what's the best way to do this now? Right.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
For some shows, it may be to release it all at once, right? Like, for something that's new and people wouldn't otherwise have a reason to kind of be into it, I can see why you would release it all at once, like release
right.
a season all
yes.
at once, because you want people yeah. to, like, keep watching, mm-hmm. right? To kind of be sucked in that binge way. But for something like this, I can see maybe releasing two episodes and then releasing an episode, you know, mm-hmm. one episode on a, you know, even if it's just a daily basis or something like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Just not all at once.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. But Joey, thank you so much for speak piping us.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
And for listening, for your kind words. And we hope you'll catch up with those other episodes. So I think we have a very positive answer to your question.
Yeah. I like to think so. Yeah.
Thanks, Joey.
Yes. Thanks, Joey.
All right. Remember, everybody, you can be like, you can be like Joey and Paul and be heard on the very next episode of The Tolkien Road. All you got to do is speak pipe us. So head on over to TolkienRoad.com and look for that leave a voicemail doohickey.
Doohickey.
Yes. All right. Now let's get into the meat of the episode, as
let's
it were.
Let's do it.
All right. So where have we been? Well, we've been through 200 episodes-ish. There's kind of a question of reckoning here because of other things that have been released. So for example, when I've released audio recordings of my first book, Tolkien's Requiem, on the podcast feed, back in 2015, or maybe it was 2016. And those were actually numbered as episodes on the podcast.
Mm.
And then I removed them. So there's like a gap, like in the 30s, there's kind of five missing episodes, and people every once in a while reach out to me and be like, I think you're missing some episodes.
Either that or you can't count right.
Well, I'm pretty sure I can count right. Okay. I re-released those later on, but not as numbered episodes. I released Tolkien's Overture chapters, but not as numbered episodes. But at the end of the day, hey, you know, like, it's kind of like Jesus was born 4 years before before he was born, apparently, because he was born in like 4 BC. There's just a question of, you know about that problem, right? That there's there's a reckoning issue in terms of like the actual year that Christ was born from when the system was actually established, the year numbering system. This is 200 episodes ish. This is officially the 200th episode, even though it might not actually be the actual 200th episode, but it's what we're calling it and what it will heretofore be known as.
Okay.
So,
okay. Fair enough.
The ground we've covered. Well, we've made it through all the big stuff.
We have.
Made it through The Hobbit, made it through Lord of the Rings, made it through Silmarillion, made it through Jackson's films, and then some. We made it through a lot of the smaller stuff, right? Leaf by Niggle, On Fairy Stories, Important Letters, The Hobbit animated film. We've made it through a lot of stuff. We've had some great interviews the way.
Oh yeah.
On some really interesting topics. We've dove into different aspects of Tolkien's philosophical outlook. I know you weren't part of these episodes, but we recently dove into an episode on Tolkien's own sort of political views, even though they weren't super well fleshed out. We got an idea of where he was coming from and how he was responding to the world events that were going on, during World War II, right?
Yeah.
You were a part of the episode I did on Tolkien versus the Nazis, right?
I was.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you were part of that.
I was.
But, we've done what we set out to do, right? We've explored just so many different facets of Tolkien's works and thoughts. And, it's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. More work for you, probably.
But it's been a lot of fun. Well, I know I don't want to downplay the work it's been for you.
No, I've done a lot more reading than I probably would have otherwise.
One thing we've called out is that there is a certain something that happens to reading something you love when you have a responsibility to kind of like talk about it or report on it, mm-hmm. right, to an audience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It becomes more laborious, to be quite honest.
Yeah, because you're not just reading for pleasure.
Right.
Yeah.
You feel a weight of responsibility to make sure that you pay closer attention and that you get things actually just right,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
You're actually reading it correctly. Mm-hmm. So, and for a number of other reasons, and you may not have like the ability to do it in kind of the, just chillaxing with your favorite book. Right. So, mm-hmm. There is that, but at the end of the day, you also through that process, I think gain greater insight that helps you enjoy it even more. Right. And it becomes a part of you in a deeper way. So, I think through that process, we've learned a lot, right? After 200 episodes, I don't know about you, Greta, but I feel like I can maybe comment on the things I've learned, right? Mm-hmm. I have a hard time ever considering myself an authority, especially in terms of like the Tolkienian world, because
mm-hmm.
it's so vast. There's so many people who came before, and there's so many people, even contemporaries, who have an incredible amount of knowledge on these things. And, I've mentioned, I've called out people on this before, but just two of our two of our frequent correspondents, David B. And Marilyn the Librarian, have both been at the Tolkien game since before I even knew who Tolkien was, right? I mean, they've both been reading about Tolkien, studying Tolkien in a very deep way, right, for years. And there's so many people out there like that. And so I still feel like my voice is a very small one in this universe of Tolkien fandom, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'll forever feel like, I'm hesitant to speak up and try to position myself as being like, well, I know something about Tolkien, right? Because I'm like, there's people that know a lot more than I do. I do feel like after 200 episodes of putting my thought out there and giving other people the opportunity to reflect on it, that I've learned a lot, and I've done what I wanted to do in setting out in a lot of ways. I've internalized a lot of Tolkien's outlook, and I've gained insights that I think are unique in a certain way to be able to share.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be important when we come back to where we're going. That'll be important in that sense. And then the Tolkienian lens. I began with the idea that Tolkien offered an incredible amount of insight and wisdom that wasn't the mainstream way of seeing things. I wanted to explore that and internalize it. So, you know, that I think is where we've been.
I would agree.
Would you add anything to that?
I think that's good. I don't know. I think that's pretty comprehensive.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I mean, I honestly, when, before we started this, when I heard the name Tolkien, I just thought of The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize how vast his writings and this world that he created was.
Well, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Even though I told you I wasn't going to do that.
but I'm inspired to put you on the spot, and I think it's an okay way to do it. We can always excise this portion if you fumble through it. So what are some of the favorite things that you discovered that you would not otherwise have read along the way?
Well, you know, first and foremost, I got to say Leif by Niggle.
Yes.
I didn't even know that story existed mm-hmm. until we did it on the podcast. And now, like, honestly, just thinking about that story, like, makes me tear up.
Yeah, I know.
It just has such a special place in my heart and in general. It's just, I find it very inspiring and very encouraging and just beautiful. Mm-hmm. On many different levels. So I'm very appreciative for the opportunity to have read that. And we've discussed it more than once on the podcast, it's one of those things that we've kind of come back to in a couple different ways. And that I think we even did a live stream about it, maybe? I don't know. But that's definitely one of the top. And I think the other one that's right up there is Beren and Lúthien.
Yeah.
Which I feel like those are two kind of, that's probably what you expected me to say. Those two things.
I kind of have my guess at what you would say, but it's still worth asking.
But yeah, and that was, and I think the Beren and Lúthien was so special. Well, it was special to me because I knew how special it was to Tolkien, and how he shared that how personal it was to him and his relationship with his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And also it was, to be completely honest, I felt like I was at least slogging through the Silmarillion. Like I was drowning most of the time and just trying to hang on. I think, Joey and I can relate a little bit in that respect. But then when we got to Beren and Lúthien, it was like I came up for air.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I can do this. So I think those are my top two. But I will say that I've also loved the letters that we've read.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I really appreciated about those was it really helped me get to know the man, Tolkien, so much more than just an author. You know, you get an insight into his family life, into his relationship with his kids, and just into what inspired his works. I feel like it kind of it just gave me a better understanding and appreciation of his works to know the man behind them a little bit better. So,
right on.
I think those are my thoughts.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'd agree with, you know, I'd read all this, you know, all these things before we started the podcast, but being able to explore them in depth has been really wonderful. Quick plug, I'll say that one other work that's very near and dear to my heart, in addition to the ones you mentioned, which I would mm-hmm. agree are probably in, you know, all in my like top 10 things mm-hmm. to say.
Mm-hmm.
I would also list Mythopoeia.
Okay.
And then On Fairy Stories. But Mythopoeia, I wanted to call out specifically because we're actually recording episode 201 right after this. It's going to be an interview of David Bates of the Pints with Jack mm-hmm, podcast, which mm-hmm. is a C.S. Lewis podcast. We are going to be on his... We recorded our episode, our interview, on his podcast a few months ago, and it's actually coming out this month, right? It's actually coming out in the month of July 2020.
Nice, okay.
You can actually have early access to it if you become a patron. It's already available if you're a patron. But
wait, our episode with Pints with Jack is already available?
Yeah, if you're a patron.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, anyway, I wanted to put a plug in for going over and listening to our episode interview with him. That'll be, you know, coming out as episode 201 soon. But then going and listening to his podcast, where we're, so we'll, in 201, we'll be talking to him about his podcast, but also discussing Mythopoeia, because I wanted to get the perspective of someone who's a C.S. Lewis guy, right?
Because it was something that Colton wrote for Lewis.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just fun, because Lewis was, as I've said before, Lewis was actually like my first literary love, right? Mm-hmm. And means so much to me on so many different levels. It's wonderful to have this thing that's basically a glimpse into a very important conversation they had.
Yeah. Right? And just a very special friendship too. And I will say that, I'm really looking forward to just discussing that, to discussing Mythopoeia again, especially with David Bates. Because I will say, I feel like the first, we did it pretty early on
in
the podcast, and, I'll be honest, a lot of it just went over my head.
Mm-hmm.
But I like to think that, you know, in the past, you know, whatever, 170 plus episodes in between, that not only have I come to appreciate and understand Tolkien a bit better, but I like to think I've gotten a little smarter. So mm-hmm. I'm hoping not as much of it's going to go over my head this time.
Sweet.
Yeah. So we'll see. Stay tuned. We'll see how it goes.
I'm looking forward to it. All
right. Yeah, me too.
All right. We're actually going to pause and take a quick break, and we will be right back after these messages. You know, if you've made it this far into the podcast, I assume you think I've got some interesting things to say. Or maybe you really just like Greta, which I completely understand. Either way, you should do yourself a favor and check out my books, Tolkien's Requiem and Tolkien's Overture. Tolkien's Requiem is an in-depth exploration of the story of Beren and Lúthien, focusing on the ways in which it links together the various threads of the Silmarillion and aspects of Tolkien's life story. Tolkien's Overture looks at the history of Middle-earth through the lens of its creation story, Ainul Indale. Furthermore, it explores the role of music all throughout the Legendarium, from the fall of Melkor through the Lord of the Rings. Both of these books are available in print, audiobook, and ebook. You can learn more by visiting TolkienRoad.com/books. That's TolkienRoad.com/books. And now, back to the show. Okay, and we're back. So, we've talked about where we've been, Greta.
Yes, we have.
And now we're going to talk about what we've learned.
Oh,
There's so much you could say on this, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I tried to structure our conversation here according to kind of like the Middle Earth timeline and the major things of Middle Earth. So I, you know, this is going to be structured by Ainul Indale, Silmarillion, Akalabeth, The Hobbit, and Lord of the Rings.
I like that. That's
so
good.
Yeah.
That's clever, clever. I love it.
So here's where I start. I start with Ainul Indale, which is, of course, the creation story of Middle Earth.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I'll call out that immediately comes to mind is I learned how to say Ainul Indale.
I still haven't learned, so I'm not going to say it.
And I learned that there's actually maybe more than one opinion on the right way to pronounce it. But that's how I say it, Ainul Indale. And it's one of my favorite words to say. Anyway.
Kind of rolls off the tongue when you say it right.
The big life lesson, I guess, or some of the big life lessons from that. Everything exists for harmony, right? Like, that's one of the things I draw out of Ainul Indale, and that Tolkien seems to indicate through that he believes that everything, right, the cosmos, exists for the point of some kind of great harmony. Okay, that it's put there for, you know, and in the case of Ainul Indale, literally musical harmony.
Right.
So
yeah,
that is a beautiful insight to me. It's a particularly encouraging insight to me because it gives me an indication of maybe what our lives should be striving for on different levels.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it kind of forces you too if you commit to that mindset, it forces you to kind of, think outside the box a little bit, right. To not necessarily take everything at face value.
Mm-hmm.
To think more deeply about things, because on the surface, many things will appear, and especially at first glance, to not be harmonious, right? But if you have the mindset that everything exists for harmony, then you're going to be forced to think about, okay, while these two things don't appear to be harmonious, they must be in some way.
Yeah.
So let's figure out what that is.
Well, and I particularly like this because in the story of Ainur Lindalay, we have not only the creator, Ilúvatar, the One, but we also have the creatures, the first creatures he creates, the Ainur, mm-hmm. and he involves them in a music, right? A music that he kind of gives, like leads them into, but they have a responsibility to flesh out, right? Mm-hmm. And to strive to make ever more glorious, right?
Right. So they're meant to be co-creators in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sub-creators.
Sub-creators. Right? Yes.
It's also a thought that is can be very encouraging in a time of disharmony or cacophony, right? Like when there's a lot of strife or whatever is going on in the world, it can help you to realize, like, okay, but maybe harmony is actually the thing that lies behind all of this and towards which we actually should be striving. Harmony is also corrective because I think sometimes we can have a mindset of like, well, what's the point of our existence, anything. It's you know, sometimes I think in especially in our time and in the developed Western world, our mindset can be, well, we need to have a mindset of like acquiring more, right? Of having more and more and more, right? And again, Ainur Lindalay pushes back on that and says, maybe that's not actually the thing. Maybe the thing is actually to exist in harmony with others,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And so that's just it's a beautiful insight and I think a helpful corrective on a very practical level, right?
Absolutely. So it forces us to think more and focus on what is it that we have in common, not on our differences, but what do we share?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The next thing I draw out of Ainur Lindalay is that nevertheless, something isn't right in this world. And that can be a very mysterious thing. Why is that, right? That mm-hmm. that there is such a thing as evil, and its origin is mysterious,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
This is, in its own strange way, that is a consoling thought, because otherwise it can lead us into the mind into a I think a dualistic mindset, right? Which, you know, and some people will take issue with that on a philosophical level, but again, I'm trying to point to what Tolkien's own insights seem to be with these things.
Mm, yeah, right.
I'd couch that against dualism by, like, so dualism would be the thought that good and evil are kind of two sides of the same coin or are equally opposed to one another, right? Whereas this thought of evil being a thing of mysterious origin and possibly not even subsisting in its own way, in a lasting and meaningful way, means that in the end, harmony, goodness, truth, beauty, these things will always, and in a final way, will win out, right?
Mm-hmm.
In a final and lasting way. So I can see the confused look on your face because we are getting a little bit into, you know, a very like kind of deeper philosophical, you know, philosophical realm with that, but we have indications throughout Tolkien's legendarium and throughout the rest of the Silmarillion, especially that Tolkien saw this evil that begins with Melkor and with Melkor's cacophony and what he leads other people into in Ainur Lindalay as being something that ultimately does not last forever, right? That mm-hmm. that is a passing thing.
Right.
That actually will play a part in making things even more beautiful in some right. in some strange
yes.
way.
Yes.
But is still nevertheless evil and less than what is meant to be,
mm-hmm.
right? And is not actually a like something that's directly willed by Ilúvatar.
Right, something that was meant for good but has been distorted
right.
in some way. But you know, it's also I was just thinking about the fact, you know, you don't have light without darkness, just like you can't have good without evil,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean. You do need that. You need that balance, right? You don't truly know good unless you've known. Just like you don't truly know happiness unless you've known true sorrow.
So that's the That's the dual. That's the dualistic question,
right,
which I think this actually rejects. Right. So,
I see.
You might.
Okay.
I will say this. Gosh, I didn't realize this might be an interesting topic for an episode all by itself. But I will say this. There is the reason I call this mysterious, and I'm not just like putting the hammer down on Melkor and being like Melkor is evil, like, which you know he's pretty evil dude, and the things he does, you know, playing out in the story of the Silmarillion. But here's the thing. In Ainulindale, Melkor is actually, there's a way in which he's a sympathetic figure because he looks at the void, at the emptiness around them, and he's like, I want to go fill this.
Right.
Right? Which, that's such an interesting reason for him to become who he is, right?
Initially, he's motivated by something good, right? I mean, he wants to... filling
maybe.
Voids
maybe
is often a good thing.
Maybe,
yeah.
Right? That's where the question gets really interesting.
Yeah.
So, I think Tolkien would reject. I'd argue that Tolkien, based on the other things we know about him, would reject a dualistic view of the universe.
Okay.
In favor of the one I described before. So a question of like, do we actually need the darkness for there to be light? Right, or is the light the goodness that creeps into the void that evil creates? Right, the falsehood that evil creates and therefore beautifies it. Right, I don't know. This gets into a really interesting question.
It does. Yeah, it really does make you think.
So
yeah.
So there you go. Maybe not so much a lesson learned, but something that would be really fascinating to
something
explore.
Something that we want to, yes, something that needs to be explored.
Maybe the lesson we've learned there is the mystery of evil is a very fascinating thing.
What
so,
we've learned is we haven't actually learned what we thought we learned.
Well.
Or maybe we just like are I, on the process, in the like, process of learning it.
I feel like that was a very Hobbit thing to say, like that's something Bilbo would have said.
I like to think so.
Can you say that again? I want to make a t-shirt that says that. What we've learned is that we haven't learned the thing we thought we learned.
I think that's what I said.
I need a high five for
all
that.
Right.
That's awesome. That may be the best thing we've ever said on the podcast. All right.
Man, I feel like I should leave. I just need to quit while I'm ahead.
Yeah. So with that, Greta's going to bow out. She's done.
Peace out, peeps.
She's achieved ultimate enlightenment right there. So, and I'm still just fumbling my way through these things. All right. And then the final note on Ainulindale is we play a part in making the world what it's supposed to be. The Valar on some level represent, or I'm sorry, the Valar really, the Ainur and the Valar and the Maiar represent an aspect of our humanity that beautifies and that brings to a greater level the things of this world. That too can be something that's abused. That too can be something that goes awry,
mm-hmm.
and that's part of the mystery of evil. But there actually is a good way of doing that. Right, in a way that fulfills the good intent of Iluvatar, right?
Right.
Of the One.
Yes, I agree.
All right, let's move on to the Silmarillion. So, Silmarillion, lessons we've learned. There's so many that can be said here, but I tried to summarize it in just a few. The first one is that we're hungry for spiritual light. We are born in a certain state of darkness, but we're hungry for a spiritual light.
Right.
And
where we search for that can make all the difference.
Right. Or where the light finds us can make a lot of difference too.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so we yearn. And when I talk about this spiritual light, it's the light. It's not a literal light, like in the sense of a physical light, but it's something that's inside of us on a spiritual level that we are hungry to gain more of because we sense its goodness, we sense its beauty, we sense its truth, and in, maybe in some way we are the void that it's meant to fill, right?
Mm.
It's meant to fill and illuminate. So the next thing I'd say is that tyranny is both inside and outside of us, right? That while in the Silmarillion you've got Melkor and he is this tyrannical figure who wants to rule over others and dominate others, each of us also has the seed of tyranny within us, right? Like the seed of wanting to hoard, the seed of wanting to be selfish, the seed of wanting to
be in control.
Yeah. We each have that thing within us, mm-hmm. and the capability. So we see with you know, with a character like Feanor, right? Yeah. We see that manifested. You know, we can see that. We can see it manifested in so many different ways through the stories of the Silmarillion. So there's a threat both internal and external to our striving to achieve harmony, right? To achieve the harmony that we sense and to gain more of that spiritual light that we sense we need and right. that we sense is the good destiny of the cosmos, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And how those seeds of tyranny that exist in each of us, how they're used, mm-hmm. right? Whether or not they've been enlightened with that spiritual light that we're all hungry for, that can be the difference between something really good and something really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right on. All right. And then finally for the Silmarillion, hope is fulfilled in the darkness. This is a particularly like amazing insight that I get from Tolkien, not just from the Silmarillion, but from other Tolkien's works as well. The eucatastrophic idea, right?
The dawn the night is darkest before the dawn.
Night is darkest before
yes,
the dawn. Yeah,
that's what I was trying to say.
And that when things seem dark, when things seem very dark, that could mean that hope is just around the corner. Right, that
that's
a surprising
interesting
hope
that
is just
you put
around
that
the
in the list of the Silmarillion, because that's something that I associate. It's clearly a running theme mm-hmm. through Tolkien's works. I kind of think of that as I just associate that idea with Lord of the Rings and the destruction of the ring. So I'm interested to hear, like, why you put that with Silmarillion. I mean, I know I understand that the Silmarillion is the, you know, the first. It's kind of the backbone foundation, if you will, for mm-hmm. all of Tolkien's preceding works. I'm losing my words. So anyway, can you please just explain?
Sure.
Kind of like just pull some examples from the Silmarillion and what you.
Yeah.
And why you chose to put that there.
So the main reason I chose to put that there is because the end of the First Age, things are incredibly dark. Melkor looks like he's basically won all of Beleriand. Mm-hmm. And what happens, right? Yarendil makes the journey, the impossible journey, to the Blessed Realm and achieves the aid of Valar. And we have the War of Wrath and the ultimate defeat of Melkor, right?
That would do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Good call.
That's the reason.
Clearly, I haven't read the Silmarillion recently. I didn't remember how it ended. So thank you.
Yeah, well, I think you could find other examples, too, of that theme.
Well, that's clear. The most obvious, I think, and probably the best mm-hmm. from that particular work.
Yeah, but that's the reason that's the primary reason I called that out.
Yeah, right, and that's my favorite. It's beautiful.
All right, let's move on to Akalabeth. The first big life lesson I had here was no earthly kingdom can last forever, right? Numenor is given as a gift to the Edain, the elf friends, and it lasts for over 3,000 years, I think close to 3,000 years, but doesn't last forever, mm-hmm. right? I mean, mm-hmm. 3,000 years, I don't think there's any human civilization that has actually lasted that long, right? Human, kind of standalone kingdom or empire or whatever whatever term you want to use that has actually lasted 3,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
You may argue that some of the ancient civilizations lasted nearly that long, but there was probably a lot of upheaval and, times that were not, there's probably a lot of ebb and flow associated with that. With Numenor, it's like almost all good until the very end, right? And in so many ways. There's a line of kings, right? That a line of monarchs that exists from the very beginning until the very end. So despite all of that, it doesn't last forever, mm-hmm. which is, you know, this is a thought that's both a sad one, but it's mm-hmm. also a thought that is consoling and encouraging, because nevertheless, people continue to exist, right? Like the people for whom these kingdoms exist do continue to exist.
Mm-hmm.
And both the good and the bad effects of this kingdom continue to exist, right? Going further down the road.
Right. They'll leave their mark.
Right.
In one way or another.
So
yeah.
So that's that first thought on Akalabeth.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is keep your eyes fixed on the light of the Blessed Realm.
Hmm.
And I have the Blessed Realm actually lowercase there, even though in the context of the story, it's an uppercase thing. But as you recall, Numenor is situated not in the Blessed Realm, but close enough to the Blessed Realm for them to have some sense of the light is just beyond the horizon. Right. And, it's actually the light of Tol Eressëa they see, but which is kind of the first marker of you're entering into that place of the Blessed Realm. But I feel like one of the things that happens in the story of Akalabeth is they lose sight, they spiritually lose sight of the Blessed Realm, right? That they begin to doubt the goodness of the Blessed Realm. They begin to doubt the intentions of the powers of the Blessed Realm.
Hmm.
And that skepticism leads them into mistakes, leads them into a cultural change that ultimately leads to tragedy and the end of that mm-hmm. kingdom,
mm-hmm.
yeah, which began as a beacon of hope, right? To the, you know, to the rest of the world. So.
Right. It's when they, that was what's the name of that? Is it Mount Tarma or the
Middle Tarma.
Yeah, I mean, when they were regularly making their pilgrimages up there, right? And kind of actively recognizing and remembering that there was something greater
mm-hmm.
than them, right? Things were going pretty good.
Yeah.
Just when all of that stopped, that it was kind of a downward slide.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. All right, moving on to The Hobbit. So, with The Hobbit, we find our true selves in the adventure, right?
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a really powerful insight
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that we get from The Hobbit. For us, this podcast has been an adventure in its own right.
Yeah, I would agree.
You know, neither one of us had ever done anything like this in a public way. In the way of putting our voices out there for people all over the world to hear,
mm-hmm.
and that comes with its own risks.
Mm-hmm.
It can be scary in a lot of ways.
Absolutely,
I'm still very timid about that in a lot of ways. But I've also learned a lot more about myself. I think you've learned a lot about yourself,
mm-hmm.
and so that leads to the same conclusion that Bilbo seems to undergo in the course of The Hobbit, is that he finds things within himself that he never knew were there, right?
Mm-hmm.
He develops into a greater image of what he was before, right? A greater version of what he was before through the course of that adventure.
Yeah. And that takes courage.
Yeah.
To put yourself out there and to get yourself out of your comfort zone and do something that, you know, you think you can't do or you'd rather not do. But that's when we grow, and that is when we discover who we truly are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we find out things about us that we maybe didn't realize were even there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I felt I had to write this one down, but dragons are truly perilous.
Truly.
and in more ways than just kind of the no duh kind of way, but the dragon is not just a big lizard that breathes fire and is scary, but the true dragon is something that does all that, is powerful in a very physical way, but also has a weird kind of spiritual power as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is sly and cunning, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can speak to you and trick you. To be sure, we actually see that in the Silmarillion too, with the dragon, with the story of Tuatha De Dananbar, the dragon that exists in that story. But it's very clear, you know, with Smaug in The Hobbit and the way he interacts with Bilbo.
Absolutely.
So I guess maybe the lesson there is when you know you're dealing with the dragon, be very careful.
Be on your guard.
Right.
Yeah.
And realize that dragons aren't necessarily just literal dragons, but also, you know, they're probably figurative dragons out there as well. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. And they're very good at disguising themselves as not dragons. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then finally with The Hobbit, it's the little people in the everyday acts of heroism that truly matter in the end, and not the lords and governors of the world. That, of course, is one of my most favorite sayings from Tolkien in one of in the Waldman letter, that the lords and governors, it's really the little people who turn the wheels of history and not the lords and governors of the world, right? It's something of, you know, Iluvatar's will, that it's not, it's the humble, it's the little, it's the forgotten that may actually make the difference in the end, right?
Yeah. Or
not necessarily the forgotten, but the easy to forget, right?
Yeah, easy to overlook.
And,
yeah.
And so maybe that means that we shouldn't necessarily be striving to be a lord or a governor or a celebrity or any of these other things, but we should strive to do the work that's before us in the best way we can.
Yeah. To be, and be humble about it. I mean, that's a true, that's another, you know, just thinking about, what Paul said about the parallels between Numenor and the Israelites. I mean, this too is a very biblical analogy. I mean, you just think about King David, you know, who always pops into my mind, who nobody ever expected, you know, out of all the sons of Jesse to be the one who was supposed to be king.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, and not that he was perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but he was pivotal, you know.
Yeah.
As one, you know, in the history of Israel. So
definitely. Yeah, so moving on from The Hobbit to The Lord of the Rings, not to be too depressing, but life is a long defeat. And maybe this one should have come towards the end of my reflections on Lord of the Rings, but this concept of the long defeat is one that I hope to explore in more depth in a future episode or two. But that this idea of we work in this life to achieve something, but in the end we will suffer defeat of various forms. But nevertheless, we have to work for the good. We have to work for the true. We have to work for the beautiful, right?
Mm-hmm.
To achieve justice, to achieve peace, right? Even though it feels, and in reality, in many ways, may be a long defeat. The other part of that is we all have a ring of some sort, right?
Mm.
Well, let me go back to the long defeat for a second. What I mean by this is, let me kind of couple this with something else I wrote down. The worthwhile journey will produce wounds that can't be cured in this world. All right. So that kind of goes along with the idea of the long defeat. And I guess what I have in mind there is one of the, I think, truest insights of Frodo's journey, and arguably of other characters as well in The Lord of the Rings. But I think you see it most acutely with Frodo, is this idea that, like, he is picked out to be the one to carry the ring to all the way to its end, and ultimately on an individual level he fails at that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He can't actually throw the ring into the fires of Mount Doom under his own power.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It takes an outside kind of miraculous occurrence to achieve that.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And furthermore, he is so wounded by his journey that he can't ultimately have a happy ending in the Shire, in Middle Earth itself.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Not the he lived happily ever after, right?
Right.
Not that kind of ending for him. Right.
Right.
And so he ultimately has to leave. He ultimately has to leave to find that happily ever after till the end of his days.
Yeah.
Kind of ending.
Right. But that doesn't mean that his wounds were, you know, worthless.
No.
Or, you know, served no good purpose. Clearly they did. And that's the journey that all of us are on.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, none of us are going to find true happiness here in this world. I mean, we can just look at how 2020 has gone so far. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way. Just when you think things might slowly be turning, it's like, oh, nope. Here comes a sandstorm. Okay, good. Right? I mean, it's like there's just there's no way that this is ever going to be the place that any of us are truly happy. And that's a really depressing thought if you don't have hope in some form of a blessed realm, right? And I think all of us too, like, you know, I'm just reminded of that passage from scripture, you know, well done, good and faithful servant. You know, that's what we all want to hear at the end. And I can't help but think that that's what Frodo heard, right? Mm-hmm. When he finally arrived at the blessed realm. But that's not going to come easy.
Yeah.
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 So, but we have hope.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, you did a really good job of fleshing that thought out a little bit more. You know, one other thing I want to call out is, or a couple other things with Lord of the Rings. We all have a ring of some sort, that the ring is a real thing on a spiritual level. And each one of us has probably not just one ring, but multiple rings that we look at and we say, you know, I could use this thing right. I have the ability to do this thing the right way.
To me. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. We can use it right to accomplish the good that we want to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And it takes a lot of wisdom and spiritual insight to be able to say, like, whoa, wait a minute. Like, the ring, I think I can control the ring, but the ring is going to end up controlling and abusing me. Right.
Mm-hmm.
If I try to wield it.
Yeah.
Right. And that applies not only on an individual level, but it applies on a societal level as well. And we have to be truly Gandalfian and Aragornian, right, to be able to recognize the ring for what it is and navigate our attitudes towards it in the proper way, right, when it comes along.
Yeah,
so
that takes a lot of self-control, a lot of wisdom. Yeah.
Yeah. So another thought on Lord of the Rings is we need a fellowship to help us make it through, right? So through this journey, right, through the journey of this life, we need a fellowship to help carry us through, because in the end, we talked about Frodo just a moment ago and his individual failure to achieve the goal on his own.
And what if Sam hadn't been there?
If Sam hadn't been there, it might not have happened, right?
Exactly.
And Sam represents the rest of the fellowship, of course, because they all... Not all of them are there at Mount Doom, but they all do their part to get them from one step to the next, And even after they're out of the picture of Frodo and Sam, they're still playing their part on a more strategic level, right?
Right. You think of even Boromir, right? Who, it's so easy to point at him as the bad guy. He was the rotten apple in the bunch.
Mm-hmm.
But even he played a part.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah, that was one of the things that I was thinking about. Like, I was just thinking, reflecting on... and, I mean, you can apply this to The Hobbit as well, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they had their own little fellowship between Hobbit, you know, between Bilbo and the dwarves and Gandalf. And it needs to be a diverse fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't just... Even though we're all, you know, as humans, we are, you know, because of our nature, we are drawn to others that are like us, people we can relate to, people we feel comfortable with. And there's nothing wrong with that. But when you're talking especially about, you know, big adventures and, journeys that are going to be hard, that are going to require more of us than we think there is, you need people that are not like you. Because, you know, because there's going to be things that you are not going to be able to do, but someone else that's not like you will be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even though the dwarves and Bilbo a lot of the time seem like oil and water, right? There's no way that mission would have been successful with only dwarves,
right,
or with only hobbits, or with only Gandalfs, right? I mean, just like in the fellowship in the Lord of the Rings is obviously a little bit more diverse because you have men, you have elves, and you have dwarves and, you know, hobbits, you have all the things, but where one falls short, the other is able to rise up.
Mm-hmm.
So you need diversity.
Yes, that's a great point too, the need of diversity. In the fellowship, you certainly have an incredible amount of diversity, right?
Mm-hmm.
In that team that they have.
And it's not always, you know, sunshine and roses.
Right.
I mean, they have their moments.
Well, you have elves and an elf and a dwarf that don't get along from at the beginning,
right?
And then lots of bad blood between those two peoples historically. You have men of different station. You have a wizard. Then you have four hobbits, and there's different like classes of those hobbits. You know, Sam is obviously very like much more of like on the working class side,
right.
and Frodo is more of Frodo and Merry, and maybe Pippin are more on the
the upper middle,
the aristocratic
middle,
or whatever you want to call it side of hobbit society.
Mm-hmm.
So even there, you've got this like very fascinating diversity within the group. All right, so let's see. The last one in Lord of the Rings is though it seems overwhelming in this world, the shadow is a passing thing. Maybe one of my most one of the best passages easily from Lord of the Rings is the moment when Sam, I think it's that Sam glimpses the star, or he gets a sense that even though they're like near Mordor or they're even in Mordor, he looks up at the sky and he glimpses a star, and he realizes that it's overwhelming and overpowering as the shadow might seem, it's really only a passing thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That
mm-hmm.
it doesn't last forever, and that beyond it there is incredible light. Right?
Even in it.
Well,
right?
but beyond what seems like the most apparent and real thing,
mm-hmm.
that there is incredible light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
That's a very encouraging thought.
Yeah.
Because you're right, the shadow can be very overwhelming. It can be very easy to fall into the pit of despair.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
The pit of despair.
Yeah.
Don't even think about
that. Oh, man.
I'm not going to clear my throat.
Good.
But
yeah, no, I think that's something that if we could all just remember that a little bit more, it would be good.
Mm-hmm.
On a personal and societal level.
Right on.
Yes.
Ein Lindele, everything exists for harmony.
We already did that.
Would you let me finish?
Okay.
Because it all comes back to that, right?
Oh, you're doing like a circular thing.
Yes.
Like cyclical.
Yeah.
Connecting the dots.
It all comes back to that. I said everything exists for harmony. The end is in the beginning, right? Strive for harmony. Resist cacophony, right? Resist the noise, the ugliness, right? And strive for that true harmony. Right.
Mm.
And harmony wins out in the end. Right? That greater beauty ultimately wins out and will win out.
Yeah. Word. You know, I was thinking about, I guess the first, you know, when we were talking about harmony before, I was thinking about, I think I said something about seeing, like thinking outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like forcing yourself to see things maybe from a different perspective. And now I'm remembering that that's a huge, like, foundational concept in Ignatian spirituality. Because they talk about, you know, I think a great way to resist cacophony, to strive for harmony, is to, as the Ignatians say, they say, see yourself from outside yourself,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, kind of try to remove yourself from your own, you know, it's a very heady kind of existential concept, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But to just change your perspective,
yeah.
right? To think about something not as maybe you yourself would think about it, but as you outside yourself would think about it.
Well, I think one thing is to strive to remove yourself from your passions, right? From your immediate appetites and your passions, and to see yourself and to work to process those things in a way that, you know, you can stand beyond them, right?
Right.
And see them for what they really are, which is pat, not bad things in and of themselves, but
mm-hmm.
but passing impulses, and things that are like the ring. They can seem like they're the thing to grasp hold of at the time and to use, but they may be actually leading you into peril, right?
Right.
If you don't use them in the right way.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. It's the whole idea of like emotion, you know, when you're too emotionally involved in something,
mm-hmm.
right, that you're just, you're not going to be able to handle, to deal with something logically and effectively, or as effectively as you would if you're, unless you were able to remove yourself. Because emotions, as intense and important as they are, you know, they're all the feels, they are fleeting.
Mm-hmm.
They don't, you know, like they are fleeting things, and we need to be able to separate ourselves from those to make good decisions a lot of the time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. And then the final kind of bonus one, and I, you know, this is where I end, and Greta's gonna, I don't know if you have any, you care to add beyond any of these things, but the last one I had was, we must create and be heroic in the little things. So this gets back to the big insight of us being sub-creators, that there's this Tolkienian insight that we as human beings have a something innate in us that wants to create, that wants to take the raw things of the world we see around us and do and improve upon them or develop them in such a way that increases their beauty, right? You know, and that can apply in so many different ways. And that being heroic in little things is, you know, is maybe a facet of that or related to that. But I just want to call out that creative part, right? Of there seems to be like that feels like a insight that I've gained greatly over the last several years, is that in the act of creation, you find yourself more, right? You learn more about yourself and you find yourself more.
Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful.
So
I agree.
All right.
And I think as someone who would, me personally, I would not label myself as a creative mm-hmm. type. I think that there, I mean, we are all called to create
mm-hmm.
in one way or another. And that looks very different. You know, it's not just being, you know, a painter or a writer or, you know, and those are all beautiful things and wonderful things. And I won't say that I wish I was better at them, because I kind of do. But I guess I would just encourage everyone, don't limit yourself to that typical or stereotypical creative type. Like we all create in mm-hmm. our own way.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just forcing ourselves to, again, to just look at things in a different way.
Even if it's just a conversation through, you know, with somebody, and you know, through that conversation, both of you being changed, like through a good conversation, you help to create the other person, and the other person helps to create you,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
To create some new aspect of who you are,
right? Or to broaden their mind in mm-hmm. some way,
right?
Yeah.
So, you know, all of that is a part of who we are. And, it seems to be something that is truly unique to us as human beings.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because we're made in the image of the one creator.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, all right. Any other thoughts on that? Lessons learned?
That was really good.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what does the future hold? Well, more of Tolkien's works, of course. We haven't exhausted them, so you know, there's still quite a bit for us to get through on that note, and we do plan to get to all the rest of the things. We want to explore more of the, you know, one of the things we hope to do in the near future is do more of the history of Middle-earth, especially the third age, but there's a whole 12 volumes of stuff that's got really interesting stuff in it called the History of Middle-earth that we haven't really scratched the surface on. We want to draw out more lessons from all of his works, including his letters. This is a real thing that I think will be a pivot for us, because I've really tried to be more like, what's Tolkien saying, like, is this from a studying standpoint so far? But I want to spend more time like offering a little bit more of our insights, right? Like drawing out in a little bit more of a, you know, the allegorical sense, right? Even though, again, I know Tolkien, not a fan of allegory, but I'm talking more in like the scriptural sense, right? Like of an allegorical reading, of saying like, okay, this isn't the only possibility, but this is what I see here. This is mm-hmm. what this speaks to me, this particular mm-hmm. incident or this particular character or, mm-hmm. You know, this particular writing sort of says to me, you know, based on what else I know about Tolkien. So, mm-hmm.
What are you personally gleaning from?
Of a Tolkien Lectio Divina, if you will.
I like that. Yeah.
Lectio Divina being the like kind of a divine reading, right?
Yeah, it's a careful, attentive.
It's a reading. It's a term used a lot in the Catholic Church, for a certain type of a way of reading scripture that's sort of reflective and spends time sort of thinking about like what is this speaking to me,
right?
Mm-hmm. That's another goal that I really hope to be able to do more of, exploring, not pontificating, but exploring the deeper meaning in different passages in a way that leads to enlightened and better living.
Mm.
Of course, attention to Latron Prime as it starts to unfold, right?
Exciting.
Just can't wait for that. So, mm-hmm. More guests, definitely want to do more interviews, and we're actually going to have a good number of interviews over the next course of the next several episodes. But this, I want to be a goal of just inviting other Tolkienian thinkers onto the show and allowing them to talk about what they see. Because I know there's so many people out there in that world, and I want to, I want to make room for other viewpoints as well. And then I would just ask you all, as our listeners, we'd love to know what you would like to see, right? If there's particular topics that you'd love to see covered. We've had people suggest topics to us in the past that we hadn't thought of, and we've ended up exploring those.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, help us help you by, you know, suggesting topics to us.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Hey, you know, you might be such an expert. We might realize you're such an expert in something beyond us that we actually tell you to come on and talk about it. That can always happen too.
It can always happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we want you guys to enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, continuing to enjoy the podcast. So we want to talk about things that you want to listen to.
Absolutely.
So tell us what those are.
What do we ask of you? At least, you know, I will just say this. I'm going to be honest with you. This isn't the first time I've kind of indicated this. At least once a year since I've started, the thought always comes to me, maybe I should end the show. And because it is a lot of work. There are days when we want to record, weeks when we mean to record, where we just don't feel like we have the bandwidth or the emotional energy to get through it, to prepare for it and to get through it. And, you know, I'm not just exaggerating when I say that it's the little things from you all that are the wind that put the wind in our sails mm-hmm. in different times, right? A note from somebody who's been binge listening, just saying like how much the show means, a 5-star rating and a comment, right? Mm-hmm. And a review that says like, I love this show, right? You know, that when we get those, there's just like, I don't know, even though we say it, I don't know that you all realize how much that kind of stuff means to us.
Yeah.
And I really wish every person who's ever sent us one of those things,
mm-hmm.
because I would give you a hug, like a long hug. You'd probably be like, John, stop hugging me. You're creeping me out. But that's the level that means to us.
Mm-hmm.
We are sharing in this Tolkien thing together, and it's enriched by the togetherness of it.
Absolutely. And, you know, Tolkien obviously is the inspiration that started this whole journey. But the truth is, we wouldn't have gotten as far as we have without those kind words, without the support. Because, I mean, we could sit here and jibber jabber all day long. What if nobody's listening and nobody's telling us they're listening and, you know, or that they care about what we're doing? I mean, it would be real hard to keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It, as an extension of that, you know, we ask you to help the road go ever on and get even more awesome by supporting us financially. And here's the thing, like mammon has its way of creeping into everything, right? You know, this idea of like money is like, you know, filthy lucre, right? That it's the motivating factor behind all things. And that's such a crass view and a crass outlook. And it's not what I subscribe to. And it's certainly not what Greta subscribes to. But at the same time, there is the reality that that money is a it's a thing, right? It is a necessary thing, and it's a way that we actually do express our love, right? It's a way we express our love, our appreciation for certain things, especially when it goes beyond the need, right? When it goes beyond, you know, what is the actual need. We don't demand that kind of support from anybody. Like, that is not something we would ever do. But we encourage you to give, because again, like, you know, like what we said with just the kind word, that not everybody sends a word, but you know, just a little sign of appreciation in the in some financial form, allows us. It's another step towards that, being able to do more in this realm, and also of, you know, showing appreciation for what has already been done, right, and for those others who are fans, right. So, all that is to say, like, you know, that is a huge way, right? That's something huge we ask of you, and we do it with hat in hand. But it's a way that you can help to create this show, right? Into what it becomes in the next, over the next, however long it lasts, right? This is another way that you can, that you can make this show even more of what you love about it, right?
Yep.
So
a way that you can all be sub creators.
That's right.
Us.
That's right. Patreon is ideal, but as we mentioned at the start of the show, we have this new thing called Tip Jar, and that's a wonderful thing too. So either one of those,
cool.
We greatly appreciate. I love Patreon because it allows us to have more of a community about it, and I would really love to do more with that community. I think I'm starting to get the hang of what needs to be going on over there, and I would love to do more with that over time. So you know, please do support us,
yes,
right, in
please.
That way.
Yeah.
Last, I just want to give a quick list of thank yous, and this is always whenever you do something like this, it's always a risk because you never want anybody to feel left out, and I can't help but think after 200 episodes and 5 years of doing this, there's going to be people that we don't mention by name who really deserve to be mentioned by name. So my first thought is thank you to everyone who has ever corresponded with us, who has ever supported us anyway, who's ever shared our material and social media, told others about it in one-on-one conversations, you know, just anybody who has been a part of this community in a meaningful way. I want to especially mention some super fans because, you know, these have been folks who have, spent a lot of time corresponding with us, in some cases have even come on the show, and, you know, some people we've actually met in person,
And some we've played a virtual Lord of the Rings Trivial Pursuit with.
That's right. That's
over
right.
Zoom.
I call out these super fans not to exclude anyone else, but just to say, like, these have been some people who definitely have been indelibly impressed upon our minds. And so with that, I'm going to mention super fans. Josh S., who I think is the original Superfan.
I think you're right.
I think we called him Superfan Josh for a long time.
Yeah, I think him and Mary Grace.
That's right, Superfan Mary Grace, who's also listed here.
Yeah.
Dr. William H., right? Dr. William H.
John was calling a doctor before he actually was a doctor.
Right. That's some kind of prescient knowledge there.
Yeah, right.
Marilyn the Librarian, who I think is the champion of correspondence. There's, like, I'm always humbled by the amount of correspondence she does with us.
And it's just always just so beautifully written and articulate. I love reading what she writes.
And insightful.
Yes.
Yeah,
like, yes.
So, David B, there's actually two David B's I'd mentioned here. And so thank you to both of them. One of them being David Bates, who I'll say his full name because he is a public figure with his own podcast. But then there's another David B who's also corresponded with us quite a bit.
And he knows who he is. Yes.
So he is one of our patrons. Caitlin from Tea with Tolkien. Just greatly appreciate a lot of the laughs that, she's given us and, made us feel cool in a lot of special ways.
Yep.
And Sharon B, who of course, did, several of our, Hobbit film episodes with us, and we had a great time doing those with
Absolutely.
Her. You know, Greta, anybody that springs to mind, like, right spontaneously here that I don't have on that list? I know there's so many more, I'm sorry that if I didn't get you on there, there's a lot.
I've got to mention the guys from Card Talk.
Card Talk, yes.
Just because that was so much fun.
It was a lot of fun.
It was so much fun. And then they sent us the game.
Yeah.
As a as a thank you for being on their show, which it was like, why are you thanking us? Like, that was a huge gift.
Which I actually feel like, I actually feel like I need to actually like do a actual like training session with them, because I played the game a couple of times and it's really challenging for a newbie to get to start it, but it was fun. Yeah. I was like, I want to learn more about this. So, but yeah, great point. We'll just say also thank you to all of our patrons, past and present. Not everyone can support forever, but for those who did, who have supported from the beginning until now, like, wow, thank you so much. For those who supported us at one point but had to stop for whatever reasons those were, thank you for your support then.
Mm-hmm.
And and then for those who maybe you're only been with us a little while but have taken that step, like, thank you so much. Thank you so much. All the binge listeners,
yes.
Thank you. All who have corresponded, thank you.
Yes.
All the 5-star reviewers. Everyone makes us feel so good, as we mentioned. So thank you.
Yes, thank you.
All the 1-star reviewers, because every story needs its Bill Ferney, right?
That's true. You know, there's something to that, right? I mean, isn't there some kind of like, you know, saying or something that's like, you haven't really arrived until you've, like, until you've made a few enemies, right?
Until,
like,
until you got some haters.
You're doing something right if you got some naysayers out there, I think.
Yeah, I'm not trying to...
Don't want too
many of them.
No, but. I was just going to say, we're not asking for 1-star reviews, but we are thanking those that have, because, you know, especially those that have been constructively critical.
Yeah.
Because I know that there's plenty of ways that we can improve.
Well, I've definitely tried to stop saying so much. So.
You have? I think that's been good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not perfect, but... try. I would like to thank Greta for joining me on this misadventure.
Oh,
so
I love that you called it a misadventure.
Yeah, well, sometimes it feels like that.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I'd be remiss if I didn't thank John for, you know, dragging me along kicking and screaming,
right on.
At least at the beginning, but in all seriousness, I've learned a ton, and I feel like I really do feel like I approach not just Tolkien but just literature in general more thoughtfully.
Mm-hmm.
than I did before we started this, so
yeah,
thank you for taking a chance on me.
Right on. It's been fun.
It has been fun. I hope there's at least 200 more in the future.
Me too.
Yeah,
me too. I think we should also thank our kids, even though they'll never listen to this, just for putting up with mom and dad as they, like, you know, do this podcast and, you know, take away time, and especially for putting up with dad being such a Tolkien nerd.
Tolkien nerd.
When, you know, they're just like, okay, Dad, would you get over the Tolkien thing already? And no, I won't. for sitting through the Lord of the Rings read aloud that we're currently doing, because I must have them all immersed in Lord of the Rings before they leave my household.
Of course, so, it doesn't matter that as we read, the boys are on the couch, like, punching each other,
right,
and, you know, making funny faces at each other and running around like crazy people.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, the upside for them in all this is they get the run of the house for at least an hour a week while we're out here. So
who knows what up?
Who
knows what they're
what's
up
going
to.
On in there? Yeah. Let's not think about that.
All right. Well, you know, this episode's gotten pretty long. Actually, a lot longer than I expected it to.
It's gotten really long.
And there was some correspondence I wanted to get to, but I think I'll save that for a future episode.
No, I want to know. You need to.
I'll show you the letter. It's a long note, and I don't want to have to rush through it. That's the risk.
I see.
Of trying to fit it in is that we'll rush through it, and I feel like it deserves more appreciation.
That's fair enough.
So,
fair enough. Okay.
But I'll show you. Basically. This letter wasn't just for this. It was actually just the final thought, but the final thought rebuked me being the only one on a couple of episodes in
Thank
a funny
you.
Way. It was in a funny way, but they
take it.
Explicitly said, like, we need Greta back, so, which I can't promise you that she'll always be here, but, you know,
well,
but
I'll be here as often as I can.
As often as she can. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. All right. Next episode 201 will be our interview with David Bates of Pints with Jack, specifically focused on Mythopoeia, and look forward to that.
Yeah, I'm stoked.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again, everybody, to listening for this special long 200th episode, for looking back on the last 200 episodes in 5 years with us on this. Thank you for being a part of this journey. And a special thanks, as always, to our patrons, and especially to our $5 or more patrons. Daniel P.
David B.
Chuck F.
Ish of the Hammer.
Chris L.
James L.
Zeke F.
James A.
Emilio P.
Shannon S.
Teresa C.
Azia V.
Brian O.
And Robert B.
Thank you all. Yes. You all rock.
Y'all are the best. All of our patrons and all of our listeners. They're just amazing.
Yeah.
You guys are the reason we do what we do and that we keep doing it.
Amen.
Yeah.
All right. Well, party on, Greta.
Party on, John.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk at you next time.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.